Welcome to Between Sundays. Therefore, I'm Tyler, and therefore, the word therefore makes sense and is important. It matters. Today, we're talking about the spirit of unity with our favorite Aussie pastor, Ken Kamau. But before we make every effort to stay united in the spirit, now that we've begged them to lead lives worthy of their calling, let's make allowances for the faults of our favorite co-hosts, Maren and Barry. Good day, guys.
I'm going to need some allowances. How are you?
Hello. I don't know what you're talking about. Faults.
And Ken Kamau, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Welcome. I understand you're a huge Between Sundays fan. You're a weekly listener all the way over in Australia.
I have it tattooed on my arm. That's how committed I am.
Thank you.
Would you call yourself an Aussie pastor?
I was going to ask the same question.
Yeah, because I will never call myself a Hoosier. It's not going to happen. I've lived here for almost 9 years.
Well, you don't have to call yourself, but if you are one.
Are you one?
I would say I'm a pastor in Australia.
Meaning that Kenyan pastor?
Nah, I'd say leaves room for God to take me in.
Thanks for being with us, Ken. We know that you're headed out back to Australia here in a couple days. And so we're actually recording this special recording on a Sunday right after your sermon. So I'm sure you're tired.
Yeah,
we did feed you some leftover Qdoba or something.
Good. Love the beans.
So we put you in front of a microphone just in time for the crash.
Yeah. Yes.
Are you crashing right now? Yeah.
Nah.
So this is a Grace's weekly podcast. We dive into the sermons that we give at Grace. We talk about the life of Grace Church, and people listen to it between Sundays to hopefully stimulate what they heard in their spiritual lives, what they heard from the past week's sermon. So thanks for being here us. Point of order, Barry. We'll be chatting about Ken's ministry in Sydney, Australia, as well as his sermon from the past weekend. Also, you can get all Between Sundays podcasts on our new Grace Church app, available now in all app stores. The heart behind Between Sundays, like I just said, is that we help stimulate your faith outside of Sunday worship services. The app does this as well with content from the weekends, study guides, devotionals, including one right now we have published about the Holy Spirit. It kind of goes along with our sermon series. So get the new Grace Church app, everybody. You can do that in any app store for mobile devices. Before we get to the sermon, guys, tell me what's new. Ken, we usually do a what's new thing, but for you, I have a couple of questions.
Okay, go for it.
You originally are from Nairobi.
Yep.
In Australia, which right now is summer, right? It's summer in Australia. Yeah. You chose to come to the United States in January. How's it going?
Chose is a very strong word.
How's it going? I saw a video of your treacherous journey to Michigan in the middle of the snow. So how is that? How do you feel about winter in Indiana and the Midwest?
Yeah, I can't feel anything right now, but I think it's a good reminder to appreciate what I have back home. It's God working to build my character. I love it. It's beautiful. Our daughter really wanted to have a what she calls a white Christmas snow and everything. And so
she got it.
She definitely got it. So Michigan was really good. So we landed in LA, beautiful weather. Came to Indy.
Beautiful weather.
It was fine. No snow. Then we made this really interesting decision to drive to Michigan. Got there and it was snowed out the next day.
Yeah.
Kids didn't go to school.
I saw that. You've been posting videos of your adventure.
My journey of faith and growth. That's what I've been posting.
You told me on Monday that you felt like you were dying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that was over. I was not overreacting.
And that was like when it was like 57 degrees.
Well, that's before the chill. That's before it got cold. I was like, oh my God, what am I doing? But I think, it's really cold. And like I mentioned, in I think Fahrenheit, we get to about 50, 45.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where it's
about as cold as it gets.
That's where
but we have one crossed. Part of in Canberra, it gets really cold. So it will get to about like 30. Fahrenheit. So this is just the full expression of my love for Grace Church.
So when you came to the States, did you have like a winter coat packed, or did you have to like go out and buy a bunch of warm clothes to accommodate your visit?
So Hannah Miller was planning this, and the first text I sent, I was like, I need winter clothes because it's going to be summer. I have nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we came with carry on, but we had one checked bag that had jackets in them.
Nice.
That's how committed we were.
Nice.
Good.
You know,
nice move.
In Dante's Inferno, the center of the center of hell is not on fire. It's ice.
I knew
it's frozen. It's a frozen wasteland. Mm-hmm. So
cool stuff.
Yeah. You've just been talking about suffering, and I was like, you know what? This has got some precedent.
Yeah.
Let me explain. Yeah.
All right. Guys, what's new? What's going on in your lives? What's new?
What you got, Barry?
I mean, I already texted you guys. You already know what's new. My meat is fermenting.
Yeah.
I think I started. Didn't I explain it on the pod last week?
Yes, you did.
I did. All right. So I got a new hobby. I'm making mead, which is like honey wine. You like ferment honey and water into like a type of alcohol. That's one of the oldest types of alcohol in human history.
Vikings.
Like way before the Vikings. Like we're talking like ancient, mm-hmm. like the ancient Mesopotamians were making mead. Mm. So anyway, so I'm
you don't
it
think
out.
I'm impressive?
Don't you? And here's the problem for Tyler and Marin is because they get more updates about my life than most people, I feel compelled mm-hmm. to send them texts about
daily
everything.
Updates.
I'm like, guys, I sent you a picture of bubbles coming up through the little guest.
But then I could relate to the bubbles because I make sourdough bread. Yeah. And bubbles mean a happy loaf of bread. You don't want too many bubbles. That means overproofed bread. But I get it. When I see a bubble forming on my loaf of bread, I'm like, oh, it's happening. It's happening.
On the other hand, if you see bubbles on your tire, not good.
No.
No?
That means you have a leak.
Oh. Does it?
Yeah, you spray some like soapy water on your tire and it just... Yeah, stick around.
You'll hear like driving around with soapy water. And,
always keeps some handy.
So how's that going? How long do we have to wait?
A month.
Okay.
We'll find out.
Oh, just a month?
Yeah. It should finish it.
That contraption on top of the jar.
It's just a little airlock.
It looked like a percolator.
No, it's, the air can come out, but it can't go in because of the water in there. So anyway, it's fun. I'm having a great time. And then there are a handful of people in my life who are very eager to see what it's like and what it's going to taste like. And
going to do a taste test.
Yeah. The main thing is I'm going to like this spring and summer, once all my fruits start coming in, is start making new batches of different fruits for my garden. And, I put a wine bottle corker machine little device on my Amazon wish list for my birthday. So
when's your birthday?
March. So it'll be perfect.
Ken, I don't know if you know this about Barry, but when he gets into something, it's like,
All in.
I know.
All the way.
Last time he was making bags or something. Like
I
remember that.
Bags.
So like,
I may swim in a lot of pools, but I always dive in head first. Yeah. So anyway, that's what's up with me.
Cool.
I mean, there's plenty of other stuff, but that's plenty.
Same old. Bears are definitely playing tonight. Mm-hmm. we'll see how they do. I don't know. I should be a more supportive fan, but
I'm bear shirt.
More nervous than anything.
Oh, you're nervous.
More nervous than anything.
So are you guys the family that, like, when a big event like this is happening, your favorite sports team or whatever is playing, do you like to be in bigger groups of people? Or do you like, does Jed, like, I have to lock in?
Okay, you do know when it comes to sports, it is Jed's world, and I am just living in it.
Yeah.
Although, I did grow up a Bears fan. This was my mother's Bears sweatshirt.
Oh,
so wearing it for mom, she'd be excited today. Jed is very, very social.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I am not at all. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to moments like this, I will go where Jed goes. So we will be among Jed's friends.
So he likes, like, even at the risk of major disappointment.
Oh, he's not like you at all.
he wants to be a bunch of people.
He wants to be either crying on someone's shoulder or high-fiving someone with jubilation and pure joy. So and I go and I scream and I yell and I pound the table and I do what I can because I do get into the game. But like, I think I've talked about this before. I don't like scary movies because I don't like things that make me feel afraid. I don't like sad movies because I don't like things that manipulate me into crying.
Surprise!
Why am I crying over this fictional story? I don't necessarily like the emotional factor of watching sports because why do I care? Why do I care so much
Unity.
If we win or lose?
I just literally
why do
about
I have
that.
So much riding on this emotionally? I don't want to feel these feelings. I don't want to feel scared if they're not going to... win the game or whatever.
It's
I don't
not
know.
That deep,
it's too it's much, not, yeah. Ken. It's too much for someone like me.
You made it very deep. I'm even questioning my loyalty to our sports team. But hey,
Lane has turned into like somewhat of a little celebrity around Grace Church now that it's known that he's a Bears
An
fan,
an avid Bears fan.
We walked into church today and three people stopped him and were like, "Go Bears!" And he's like, just like looks at him.
He's like, "Dad, who's that?"
Yeah. But on the way to church today, the Bears and the Rams play tonight. And so Milo, my oldest, who's eight, he's like, Lane, when we get home, let's play Madden, the football game on video game. And I'll be the Rams and you can be the Bears. And Lane, unironically, or just not trying to be funny at all, was just like, no, I don't want to do that because I want to keep the guys fresh for tonight.
No way. That's the way. Keep the guys fresh. Oh, wow. That's adorable. Yeah. That's amazing.
Like, I don't think he connects it that those aren't real people.
I told Tyler there is no greater gift he could have given the Gaffrons than one of his sons becoming a Bears fan. Oh, wow. It's been the best.
It has been truly the best. Ken, here's something new that I noticed about you. You have to put glasses on now when you read.
I do.
Last time I saw you, that was not a part of your life. I recently also became a put the glasses on when I read kind of guy.
Me too.
You don't believe what happened. So we're playing Catan. It's a game of Catan. And we're around this table. And I'm just like messing up because I'm trying to do stuff. And I'm like, I can't see anything. So our friend sitting next to me jokingly said, do you want to wear my glasses? And I said, okay. Then I'm like, I can see everything.
Yeah.
So I went to the doctor and they're like, yeah, you need glasses. So I now wear glasses.
Only when you read, though.
When I'm reading. Yeah. Or, so.
How old are you?
That's a loaded question. I'm somewhere between 48.
Okay.
And 48.
48. Okay.
That's
all right.
A long time, though. It hit me like right around 40. Okay. Like,
42.
Eyes are starting to go.
Yeah. Do you have to read? Do you have to wear glasses when you read?
You walked into my office one time, and the first thing out of your mouth were, are those readers? Are you wearing readers right now? I felt mocked.
Yeah. I've joined that club recently as well.
Oh, really? Just remember, I always put a note now in my sermons, carry up my glasses up, because I've been upstage, and I
can't see.
Oh, sure.
I can't read the Bible. I'm like, okay, I'm going to trust the word in my heart. Yeah.
All right, so we gonna transition to the sermon in just a minute, but Ken, I would love for you to share just a little bit about yourself. We kind of did that in introduction during services, but I would love for you to share just a little bit about yourself, about your family, and kind of your call to ministry. For those who may not know you or weren't here 10 years ago when you were kind of doing the year-long, what do we even call that, like? It wasn't like
a residence.
Sure. Yeah. So for people who may not be familiar, can you just share a little bit about yourself, family, and kind of your call to ministry?
So family, married to Ashuka. I've been married 21 years and happily married for 21 years. Ashuka, people don't know, we met in high school. We've dated since high school.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
I did not know that.
Since high school. That's a good cue for Jesus is Lord. I'll take that. But we have two kids, Nathan, who is 20 this June. He's a plumber, loves it.
Unbelievable that guy's 20.
Yeah.
Like when he was here.
I've seen photos of him at Fuse and like he's like tiny. Like I have a photo of the two of them and they just look so tiny.
Yeah. And that picture you showed, now I think you were sitting. But he looked about 9 feet tall.
Yeah.
He's
about 6'2 or something.
I heard audible gasps when that picture was shown in service this morning.
People who knew him said,
that's
whoa.
That's his son.
So he's now he started pumping iron, so he's getting bigger.
Yeah.
So he's a plumber, loves his job. And then we have Mukeni, who's 14. Very different kids, but love both of them. So he still is in the worship, does drums, guitar. He stopped singing. He used to lead and sing. Stopped doing that. And Mukeni is now playing guitar in our youth group. And she sings well, but still building confidence. But the two of them, they're the kids who love Jesus. We really are blessed to have them.
Yeah.
Nathan's been leading worship for
a long time.
A long time, for your church. Yeah.
I don't think he had a choice.
No, I don't know.
We're still working on whether he was called into it or was. Because we landed. I don't know if I told you how it happened. We landed in Elwood, and there's like no one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so I told him, dude, I'm going to teach you how to play guitar because I can't make the tea, prepare the sermon, lead worship.
Guitar?
Yeah.
I don't think I knew this, Ken.
No, I didn't either.
Cute.
Ken.
He partied hard.
I'll take that. So I told Nathan, I told Nathan, I'm going to teach you how to play guitar because there's nobody else. Because it's just the four of us and Terry. Like, there's no one else. Mm. So this is the part I feel like really God did something, because I taught him, I'm going to teach you the basic chords. I'm going to make like very basic stuff. But one day I was in the lounge and I heard someone play guitar. And so I said, I wanted to listen to what he was like listening to. I walked in, he was playing guitar. Like, how are you doing that? He's like, doing what? I'm like, how are you playing guitar like that? Like, it's been like 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I believe that God, the Holy Spirit gifted him. I truly believe for that season where the church was at, we had no instrumentalists. Nathan started playing really complex things and started leading worship. And he did that for 3 years straight every Sunday.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
That was during the time I went to visit you guys in 2019, and he was doing it every week at that point.
Yeah.
Did you give him a break when you went over there?
Yeah.
He played drums the day you played guitar. He led with the guitar. Nathan, I think, played drums for you.
Yeah. We got off the plane, and Ken's like, hey, can you lead worship tomorrow?
I just needed someone with breath in their life to help us. Can you breathe? Yeah, okay, you're fine.
You're on
serve.
Tomorrow.
You can serve.
Yeah. Ken, just last week, as I was preaching about spiritual gifts, I'm of the opinion that God will give a whole diversity of gifts way beyond just the lists in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a perfect example of exactly what we were talking about last week. Yeah,
there is no way it makes sense other than God did it.
Sure, like, he needed it for the time that was appointed. Yeah. So that's awesome.
So that's family, Nathan, and our ministry call is very two things that stood out for us. One, when we first went to Australia on sabbatical, we had a moment in a church where I was in a small church. And I was preaching, and I really felt a conviction that God was calling us to work, to do some ministry in Australia. Mm. Just because I'd come from a church that was large and had campuses, and we're pretty okay, uncomfortable, very comfortable. But I sat in this church, there were no kids. The church had two kids that Sunday, and they were both my kids. Mm. They had no kids, nothing prepared for Sunday school, because they'd never had kids in Sunday school. So someone took my kids at the back, started doing some coloring with them. And I preached to this group, maybe about 20 people, all in their maybe 70s. And just the joy and listening to them, I just felt, Lord, I cannot just go back and just unsee this. Mm. And that's a moment that I felt God sifting us and sort of just shifting us towards that missional call. Yeah, and went back, talked to our elders, and they prayed about it. And it just so happened, as that conversation was happening, Nairobi Chapel and Grace Church were talking about planting a church in Sydney. Mm-hmm. I was not aware of this conversation. Mm. So I come back from Australia, and then Bishop also calls me and says, hey, how are you doing? I'm like, every time he calls, you're like,
what do you want?
Doing okay.
Let's have it. Yeah.
And he said, we are thinking of doing this and this in Sydney. I said, you would not believe that. I've just been through the last 3 months. Our elders have been praying and fasting on whether to send me, because I had sent out so many people out from our church to plant churches. I felt like I needed to do this. Mm. And so I stepped down from my role as lead pastor, and a lot of people called me and said, are you crazy? The church is doing well, growing, you have campuses, you guys are large. Why would you just leave that and go to where you're going to? But that's when I knew it was God who had called us, because it was not something I would have done. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's where our missional call started.
And so it's been almost 10 years?
Almost 10 years.
So tell us a little bit about your journey there. I know that you... Obviously, you preach because you preached this morning, and you were senior pastor of a church called Earlwood at one point, and then you stepped away from that. So kind of share a little bit about what your journey has been like in Sydney with all the different roles you've played over there.
So we landed in, myself and Terry landed in Earlwood, and we walked in, I think I've shared this before, I walked into the church, I was going to preach there. I walked in, I found a Bible study around the table, I joined them. And I was like, okay, waiting for service. And I asked the guy next to me, hey, my name is Ken. I'm coming to preach here. Could you tell me what time service is? And the guy told me, you're in the service. Like, oh.
It's right now.
It's happening.
Like, I looked around the table like, oh, okay. And so it was a shocker for us. That's where our journey started, with nine people in the English service. And I had a Greek congregation. Mm-hmm. So I ended up, Terry and I ended up working to revitalize not one but two congregations that had been separate for many years, and one church that had had the same minister for 52 years. Wow. And so we started. Everything I had learned around church growth and strategy went out the window. Mm-hmm. Like I just said, Lord, I just need you. We just got on our knees and just said, Lord, we need you to move in this place. The church had not had any visitors. And so first thing, put the team together to lead worship. But then we just like prayed hard. Like I know it sounds super spiritual, but there was no other strategy. Mm-hmm. Like we just needed to fast and pray. And I remember the very first time someone walked off the street into the church and said, I heard music. And he walked in, Irish guy, and he just sat at the back and said, oh, I heard music, and I walked in. And then he came in the next Sunday. Like, he came in the next Sunday, and what's your name? And then he settled, and then he brought his family. I was like, oh, I thought around us. The Lord gave me a very interesting idea. I said, we need young people. It's very expensive to get married in Sydney. It's really expensive. So I put it out on social media. I do weddings for free. All right? I do weddings. I do not charge anything. I only have one condition, that I do some counseling for you, and we do it at our home. And during your ceremony, I get to preach. I did so many weddings.
Wow.
So people just like, oh, there's this guy who does weddings for free. But you build relationships.
Yeah. Yes.
Most of them are far from God, and that's how young people started coming to church.
Yeah. That's amazing.
A lot of the couples came and stayed, started serving, and they're still there.
Started having babies, presumably.
Yes. Yeah. So some of our baby dedications are through those guys. And that's a strategy God gave me for that particular season.
Thank you,
so it's not something I say is a go do this.
Sure.
It worked well for us. And so Earlwood grew. But at the same time, I was working with the Baptist Association, and they had just a vision to plant 1,000 healthy churches. But they had not done it. They were doing about maybe two churches a year, planted two churches. And it's how amazing how God works. I'm in a meeting with Bishop Oscar and a few guys. We're talking about what I'll be doing. There's a guy who heads church planting who wants to come and meet Bishop Oscar and meet me. Then he comes in, but he comes in early. So I go out to the lobby. I find a guy there and I tell him, hey, just join us for the last few minutes of the meeting. He was coming to meet them about something very different. And as he sits there, we're talking about what God has called us to do, the vision and everything. And he sits there and says, this is it. This is what we've been praying for. And the next day he heads up to our director and says, I think we found the guy. And they say, Ken, would you come and join our team and be part of it? So all these things are just falling in place in an amazing way. So I joined the Baptist and started helping the church planting. That's what I've done in Kenya. It's my passion. And being foreign to the country, I have access to many other communities that people would not have access to. So I started going into the Nepalese church, the Cambodian guys, Nigerian, everywhere. Because I'm a migrant, it gave me so much permission and so many open doors that many people would not have had.
Sure.
And that was, the association shifted from being majority just regular, say, white Australian. So by the time I was leaving, the last conference we held was 57 people who were from non-English speaking backgrounds, right? And out of the churches we planted, it came to a place where about maybe 60% of the churches planted were mostly from non-English speaking backgrounds.
Wow.
And that's where the majority of the growth has happened. So that was my role with the Baptist Association. And for a number of years, I was just doing that, meeting people, planting churches. We started with 3 a year, 4, then 5, then 7, then 8. We got to 20 churches a year. And as that was happening, Earlwood was growing. There's a guy I met in a conference, and the Spirit of God told me this guy will be the next lead pastor of Earlwood Baptist. And I told him that. I just saw this, and he said, oh, yeah, not happening. He's a student pastor of a really large church, love God. And so when I was coming towards, I knew God had called. I knew I was leaving in 3 years. I just had this thing in my head. He came to me and said, hey, I'm transitioning out of my role. I reckon I could try it. I told him, do this. Come and work with me for a year. At the end of the year, if you feel God calling you to lead this church, I will stay another year with you and mentor you, and you can do that. So he jumped on. And in February of 2024, I handed over the reins to him, Billy. He's amazing.
He really is. He's an amazing guy.
He's just grown that church.
Yeah.
And I'd met him like 3 years before, and then we did not connect again for another 3 years until, So he came, and it's amazing.
What I found when I went and visited in 23, what I found so fascinating, and this is what the Baptist Association has been able to accelerate church planting through is that Sydney is now this massive megalopolis. I mean, it's a huge city, very expensive to live in. Real estate is extremely expensive, but what there are scattered throughout the entire city are all these old church buildings that are filled with 10 elderly Greek people or whatever. And it's all this, it's incredible asset that is not, had not been, you know, fully utilized for the kingdom. And so to be able to not, you know, sell those buildings and turn them into a bar or something, like, but to actually revitalize them and have new congregations placed in places that, buildings that were built. I mean, when was Earlwood built, the building?
1914.
Right. Wow. So these are, you know, 100-year-old churches. Yeah. So anyway, I just find it so fascinating. Yeah. God was planting seeds.
Thank you, Lord.
100 years ago for what is now coming true in a very different city.
We'll talk about spiritual unity in a little bit. But I'm curious because Sydney's also one of the most like ethnically diverse places in the world. What have you, and you touched a little bit on like the permission to go into places not everybody can go in, but what kind of like specific challenges is the church in Australia or Sydney specifically, are you witnessing or observing that you're like, these are the challenges that you are called to help solve or minister to?
Well, I did, at one point I felt God calling me or giving me the place to be a bridge builder. That really, because the Baptist, a standard Baptist church would have had the same minister for about 25 years. Mm. Most ministers would be bivocational, and so they're there. But most of them are situated, like as you mentioned, in a suburb that's grown around the church. Now, that when Baptist churches were planted, people used to walk to church, so they needed churches not too far from each other.
Right.
But now you have this church that is around it, a whole new community has built built around it that's predominantly very diverse people. Most of our ministers are equipped to shepherd and have very little interactions with people from different cultures. So they genuinely don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And so people would come in to church and like, I don't know what to do. So people would come in, there's no connection, they leave. And so when I looked at our data, I realized we have many churches, but then we have that are small, have buildings, but are very small. But we have a lot of little ethnic churches everywhere.
Yeah.
Mm. It's because these people have tried to get in, but they can't. And many people
they're never going to afford a building. Yeah, so they're meeting in living
in homes and all that in council centers. So I said, what does it look like to have a conversation with these guys, let them know, hey, it's possible to coexist. And you could act, your role right now could be one, what I say, a legacy builder, where you're saying, this property was handed to us. It was built on the sacrifices of many who've gone before us. It's our time to actually realize the church in Sydney or New South Wales has changed.
Yes.
Mm. And how does it look like to bless these people? Because some you've been in that building for 30, 40 years, right? It's hard to just hand the keys to someone who's just walked in and has been there for 3 weeks. It's like you feel like you haven't earned it, so to speak.
Sure.
So breaking that barrier was one of the hardest things. And we did it through relationships. So my role was heavy on relationships. So a typical conversation for me would look like coffee with a minister. The church is dying. That's the reality. You love Christ. You love this community. What does it look like for your church, for us to work with your church to see this work not die? Because if a building is sold in Sydney, a church building, it's gone.
Right.
There will never be a church there again.
Mm.
Because a lot of the property was given by the crown, right? Because we're still under the king.
Sure.
And in very, really expensive places now, and no church can afford to buy. So if it goes up for sale, real estate will snap it up. So we try and protect that. So we had to do a few things. One, put a law or in our constitution that if you're below 20, you cannot transact a building. Because we had incidences where a church of seven had met and said, all right, we're going to die out. We're going to sell this building and we're going to give the money to charity. And so they sell a building worth $4-5 million and just give it to charity and then all walk away.
Mm.
So we had to put a law to sort of make sure that never happens again. And so it would look like talk to this minister. They say yes, then have that minister meet with this other pastor, try and build relationship, bring people in slowly because you don't want to shock the system. Because remember, we're still a voting. Mm-hmm. People have to mm-hmm. vote for this. You can't mm-hmm. just impose on it.
Right.
And so just journey with the church. Help them. So I'll be doing seven of this conversation at the same time. Take a group of people on a Sunday to this church. Let them lead worship. Let them hear the gospel. Do morning teas. Do things together. And then to a point where, okay, finally we're together, launch them. Then they start seeing new people. And then we normally encourage the pastor who was there to stay for maybe another 3 months. Yeah. Hmm. So they can see that you have not failed. Because a lot of them feel like they failed.
I was just thinking how energizing and life-giving must it be for that pastor to have somebody like you come in and give fresh vision and make them feel like they're not alone and they're not a failure. And like so many pastors just need that support of someone coming alongside them to make them feel like they're not doing it all on their own.
Yeah. And so we launch and then that launches. So there's one particular one that had maybe was about 10 people and I had the conversation with them before I left the association. It's a Nepalese church. They were averaging 200 to 300 people a service in a church that had 7 people for about maybe 7-8 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So
so that's not currently what you're doing now, right? You started something new. Do you mind sharing a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I felt God calling me back into local church ministry. So I was doing that, I don't know how, but God gave me the grace for that, where I was doing that and fully and revitalizing Elwood. I felt God calling me back into local church ministry, and I ended up at Ride Baptist Church.
R-Y-D-E.
Yeah,
in case anyone's curious.
Ride Baptist Church. And it's just a phenomenal church. It's one of our larger churches. I love it. Like I love being there. I feel like I'm in the right place. Our family feels like they're in the right place. And my role right now is to just help this church that is one of our larger churches, has a school and a few other things. We're in a growing community that is just exploding. One of the few places where we're starting to now put high-rise buildings. So in Australia, people don't love that. But it's so becoming so hard to afford anything in Australia that they have to put up high-rise building. And we're right near one of the few communities that you can access the city through ways. You can do it by ferry, by train, and you can do it by bus, all right? So it's one of those, it's set up in a very interesting way. Hmm. So because of that, a lot of young families are moving there, and Ride is set up at the place where my desire for Ride is a few things. One, that will be a church that can be a blessing to the community, because we're one of the larger churches. So we have a great great property that can be a blessing. Two, I really feel Ride is called to raise up leaders for the church in Australia and the global world. So we're starting, and that's why I'm really pushing on these interns. I really do feel that this is a big thing we have. And the third one, I really do feel like Wright has this missional, it has a history of missional engagement beyond its borders. So especially to the First Nations. It's something that we really invest in. We have our first missionary couple. They don't come to Wright, but we support them. Their First Nations are doing amazing work in the outback. And so we're committed to that and really want to get our local church out there.
Wow.
Because of my previous role, I was able to travel and there are churches where one church is here, the next church is 600 kilometers. And so we have ministers who literally drive, the circuit ministers. They will drive here for a weekend, do all the communion, do all the baptism, then drive this place, do all the baptism, all the communion. Like, and these guys will wait for maybe 8 Sundays until the minister is back.
Wow.
That's like in the outback. So if we can empower these churches and help them, that's one of the things that really feel we are called to as a church.
Part of the reason I wanted to go through that with you is because Barry touched on it a little bit in service, but for people who may have joined Grace Church in the last couple months or couple years, they may have no idea that Grace Church is connected somehow to things happening in your ministry. And so I think it's important to bring people up to speed on that, because 10 to 12 years ago, you talked about it, Barry, we kind of joined forces with Nairobi and supported you and your family going to Sydney. And especially as we talk about unity, the feeling unified in some of the work that God's been able to do through you and your efforts and your family, it's important for people to know who belong to Grace Church that is one way we've been unified in loving and supporting you.
So here's what I love. And again, just to inform for people who don't know, but we routinely will find ways to support our partners, our partner ministries. And that includes everything from like Mission to Ukraine to City Relief to Ken and his family. We have 35 partners-ish, 40, something like that. And so we're, you know, periodically we'll do special things to support our partners. Sometimes we'll support a partner with 5% of our December giving or something like that. But always, on an ongoing basis, we commit 1%. It's not much, but 1% of all of our contributions that come in, we give away. We give beyond the walls of the church, which includes to our partners. And so it's never an exorbitant amount. I wish it was a lot bigger that we could give away. But like throughout the year, Ken is always receiving a small bit of support, financial support from Grace Church, which means that if you give to Grace anything, you are, by giving to Grace, your financial, you are actually playing a part in revitalizing churches in the outback of Australia through the work of Ride, which is led by Ken. So it's like, it's just cool to think that we are actually all part of this web of the kingdom. That's what's so beautiful.
So let's talk a little bit about the spirit of unity in your sermon. We like to start every conversation about sermons by just kind of stating what the big idea was. And you had a very clear big idea. Yeah. Do you mind sharing it, what that was? Or do you want me to remind you what it was?
No. if I forgot it by now, blame the lunch. No, it's, the big idea is that unity is not something we invent, godly unity, but it's something that we protect by walking in step with the Holy Spirit. Yeah,
I find it just so fascinating that you're the one to deliver this message, having kind of led ministry across multiple cultures, Nairobi, Sydney. Where in your experience have you seen unity come naturally to the church? And then where have you seen that churches have had to fight for unity? Because you had a great illustration on stage of the Jenga, and it's like we try to force unity and we're going to fix it. So where in your experience have you, you don't have to name names or anything, but what experiences have you had where it's like, this church is naturally unified and it just kind of feels like an expression that is natural versus expressions or experiences where people are trying to force it?
I'll give you two examples that are really close to my heart, and I think one of them will surprise you. So in Ride, Ride Baptist Church is part of what we call Together for Ride. Right, so one of a group of churches together in Ride have come together to do things together, unity. Right, it's led by one of the guys who attends our church, but he's from the Salvation Army background, and they try and birth city movements that bring unity. So Together for Ride is comprises of Pentecostal churches, Baptist churches, Anglican churches, Methodists, and all of us. And they say everyone has a seat around the table and everyone has a voice around the table. The principle is we don't agree on all things, but we work together on some things. And that's really important. So when we come around, so for Together for Ride, every month the pastors gather together, different churches host, and we do things like prayer. We share, for example, Ride does a meal for people who are doing it tough. And we have volunteers from different churches who come to help in that. There's something called Midtown Eats, where it's a government housing where we run a monthly huge meal. And it's, you're talking about hundreds of people. But what we do is that people from different churches actually come together. It's driven by one church. It's not even a Baptist church, but people come there. So Together for Ride is an expression of what it looks like when churches come together in unity. We don't agree on all things, but we work together on some things. And we've decided what the key things are. And so that has become, so every time a new pastor comes in, so when I joined Ride, I was invited to this lunch and I met all these pastors from both the Uniting, Methodist, Baptist, and they said, hey, Ken, we sit around this table, we have, and we talk. How can we help you? What do you need? All right? And that shocked me. I was like, wow. That's one example. The other one is Ride Baptist Church. Now, Ride Baptist Church If you look at our website, if you look watch it on YouTube, you'll see Ride Baptist, Ride Salvos. Salvos is salvation, Salvation Army.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So Australian short in everything. So yeah. Ride Salvos is Ride Salvation Army. Ride Baptist Church comprises of two congregations.
Mm.
Ride Baptist Church and Ride Salvation Army. We meet in the same building at the same time in one service.
Oh. Okay. Wow. How does that work? That's fascinating.
I'm talking about unity. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So during COVID, Ride Salvation Army started using Ride Baptist property for their 4 o'clock service.
Mm-hmm.
When COVID ended, they lost a number of people and they came and said, hey, you know what? It just doesn't make sense for us. This is not working for us. And they said, you know what? We'll just bring our people to your service and they'll just attend. But they came in and they started serving. One of the things Salvation Army is really known for is music. You grow up in a Salvation Army. They're the guys with the bass, the drum, all those things. So they're very musical.
Mm.
Music is core to them. But we have different theological views on some things.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so when I came in, I said, help me understand this. What this relationship? I said, what are the core things that we agree on together?
Yeah.
Mm. We agree on the Lordship of Christ,
mm-hmm.
inerrancy of Scripture, the continued work of the Holy Spirit, the Trinity,
yeah.
salvation by grace. I say, what are the core things that we know that if this one's changed, then we're maybe not together? And we agreed on what those things are. And so Ride Salvo is part of Ride Baptist Church,
mm-hmm.
but we're two different entities.
Mm.
So if you come on my staff team, Amanda, who's a Ride Salvo officer, sits on my staff team as one of the pastors.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And we work together. Part of our music team has people from Salvos.
Mm.
All right? When we do Christmas appeals, Salvation Army is well known globally. Like, they're one of the few religious entities that any mall would open their doors to. You have the uniform, you have the red bucket, mm-hmm. anyone, all right?
Mm.
So they bless us with that. So when we want to get into a big space or get a government grant, they will apply for us
because
they know.
They've got the name.
They've got the name, all right? And then we have people. So when they're doing the Christmas appeal, we put together packages for over 200 families that are doing it tough so that every child in a housing commission gets a gift.
Mm.
So they're not many. They're about 10 of them. So people will bring stuff to the church.
Mm.
And then our congregation that's larger will come and pack the things, do everything. And so Greg is a pastor, so to speak, Amanda, Jared, all these guys are on our staff team, but they're Ride Salvation Army. Wow. That's what they are to the core. Communion, they don't do communion. We do communion. All
wow.
right? So we've had to agree on that. This is core to who we are as a Baptist. And they're like, that's fine. So one of the Salvo people will be playing keys as we are serving communion. So
you can distinguish in the congregation who is Salvo and who is Ride.
Not anymore.
But based on who receives communion?
Well, some people don't and they're neither. So, uh-huh. But you can tell because they would wear their little...
They've got their little red shield.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. They wear that to church every week?
The T-shirt would have the red shield. Mm. Now, if you come to our building, because now we've given them an office in our church... So, because they do a lot of care stuff, people come and they'll say, this is Ride Baptist Church, but they'll see a sign for Salvos and they'll say it's upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And people call. So I'll do pastoral care for Ride Salvo. And so it's a very unique thing.
When
you talk about unity.
Fascinating.
Yeah, that is really interesting because you said in one of your stories, in your sermon, like everybody's for unity until you realize like your name's not going to be on the building.
Yeah.
So one of my questions was, what do you think spiritual unity costs or requires? And maybe the Salvos story is an example of that. But I feel like if we're going to agree to be spiritually unified and through peacemaking and through the Spirit of God and stewarding what God's already given us, it's going to cost something. And so what do you guys think spiritual unity in the Spirit costs people or organizations?
I don't hear Barry Maron has to say, so I say mine.
The first thing that comes to my mind is pride. It's mm-hmm. going to cost us our pride, our right to be right.
Mm-hmm.
You had some mostly agreements with the two congregations that are melding into one service, mm-hmm. maintaining their distinct identity, but also coming together as one. You agree on lots of things, but you don't agree on some pretty key things. And communion mm-hmm. is a very big deal. We shared communion this morning. And so in that example, someone laid down their right to be right. Mm. Someone laid down their pride. Mm. And I guess for the greater good, for the spirit of unity yeah. and the bond of peace, made the decision to partner and not just coexist, you know, but partner, engage together in the work of the kingdom at mm-hmm. Ride Baptist Church. That's amazing. That's mm-hmm. the first thing that comes mm-hmm. to mind.
Mm-hmm. I think it's comfort. I mean, I agree 100% with you. I think the second thing is comfort, because when you are choosing to extend grace or hospitality to those that are different from you, whether it's different culturally or ideologically or theologically, it's really uncomfortable mm-hmm. because we all are sort of genetically predisposed to be around people who think and look mm-hmm. and act like us. And so it has always been that way. It's always been really challenging. There's a reason Paul has to go on and on mm-hmm. about there is no Jew or Gentile. There is no male or female. Mm-hmm. Like, we are one in Christ. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't have to go on and on about that if it was something that we all just got easily and naturally. Right. So yeah, I think it's a big time matter of comfort. And that's from someone who spent some time in other cultures around the world. Like, I know how uncomfortable it can be to be around people who don't see the world the same way you do. And yet we're called to be one. We're called to be in the same community. So it does require a little bit of a sacrifice of comfort, with the promise then of something far more right. beautiful yes. on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the fruit of that level of unity through discomfort is a kind of a peace and a community that could never happen without it. So mm-hmm. It's worth it. Like, the end result is way worth it, but it's not an easy road to get there. So
I think there's a lot involved in sacrificing comfort. I think that that's kind of an umbrella that encompasses a lot of things. When you were talking about what's happening in Australia, I just kept thinking, that's Chicago. No. All these little churches that were built in nestled into neighborhoods that were of walkable distance,
yeah. Yeah.
that are 100 years old or yeah. so, give or take,
yeah.
that are dying. Mm-hmm. My kids went to a Lutheran school, and the church that assembled on Sunday was an aging congregation. Mm. They were certainly what we would consider a church that's dying or in the process of dying off. But the school kind of kept the place running.
Yeah.
Shortly after we moved away, the school went under, and I wonder what's going to happen to that church. They were already dying. Now, it had been historically a German neighborhood, and so this Lutheran school, at one point, I think the cornerstone of the church said 1954. Mm-hmm. At one point, it's a thriving school and church, and I would hear stories throughout the 6 years that my kids were there, of the heyday when you'd have to get out extra folding chairs because the church was so full.
The glory days.
Absolutely. Glory days. Yeah. But over time, the neighborhood changed.
Yeah.
And the Germans, by and large, moved away. Yeah. And the Polish people moved in, and the Mexicans moved in, and it became very Catholic and not very Lutheran.
Yeah.
And the church didn't change enough to be able to reach out to who was currently living in the community. In fact, they're one of the churches I could think of that took down the basketball hoops because it was attracting the wrong crowd. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
In that situation, I think to maintain a spirit of unity, they would have had to have given up their exclusivity.
Yeah.
This is who we are. This is what we do. And they would have had to have embraced the cultures that were now living in the neighborhood of walkable distance to the church and school. And I think there was some effort to do that, at least on the school's part, but not enough effort to do that on the part of the church itself. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm sure that's happening, you know, here in Indiana, but that's where my mind goes when you're talking about what you're seeing. I've seen it in Chicago. Yeah.
It happens in a lot of dense. It's interesting because I found out that churches in the rural areas of Australia survive longer than churches in the city, all right? And there are a few factors to that. So for churches in the rural areas, there's a lot more connection to place to place. So people either own their own property will not move, and therefore they'll be there longer.
Yes.
Mm. All right. People place. Mm-hmm. In the city, there's less connection to place, because when you get migrant communities are in fluid motion.
Sure.
Depending on housing, availability, right. work, and all that. So one of the two anchoring things that happen in migrant communities is church and school. Those are the two anchoring things that happen. If they move into a place where there's a good school, people will be willing to travel further or stay in the area, sacrifice more for the sake of their kids. Mm-hmm. If there's community, people feel the sense to stay longer. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the few factors in terms of why churches in the rural areas survive longer and this one's shut quickly. To add to your point around what you said, I think maturity is one of the other things. Mm. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of maturity to disagree and still be friends.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It takes a lot of maturity. Mm-hmm. And it's hard because it gets really personal very quick.
Yes. Mm.
All right. And so maintaining that objectivity in a time of disagreement takes just a lot of maturity. Mm. And a lot of our ministers, unfortunately, are not equipped to handle that. Mm. So you find that if someone comes to the church, they're different. You're like, I don't like that anymore. Mm. So, because I lived in that world for a number of years, I've seen everything from pastors who are just like, embrace this whole thing, bring in all the people to pastors who are just like, with people coming to the area, what we need is to build walls, not tear them down. Mm. We need. So that's the mentality they have. And so it takes a lot of maturity for them to say, you know what? I think our season is over. We've been faithful with the gospel. It's time to hand it over to this next community. Because there's a church that has maybe 15 people, English speaking, in a totally Arabic area. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, I think it makes more sense if you actually start an Arabic evening service, because you have a lot of Christian people come and people are asking about faith. Yeah. I mean, they just struggled. Like, I told him, I understand you don't know anything about the Middle East. You know, like, I told him, it's okay. Like, the people who migrate include doctors, teachers,
pastors,
tradesmen, and pastors.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And so this is where Frank Farag came in, who you met.
Yeah.
So you went into this church, and I remember how that church went from, I think I even took you guys to that church that was about to close, and they opened up, and it's now a thriving church.
Yeah.
Praise the Lord.
Predominantly young, professional people of Arabic background, because that's the whole community. That's where they walk to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
But the church, the good thing about this church, the original congregation stayed. Mm-hmm. And they're so happy.
Yeah.
I told them, this will happen, maybe we're there for another 50, 60 years, it'll be a different
area,
and somebody else will come in. So, maturity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, they got to experience the fruit of staying, of doing the hard work, which far too many people will never taste because they leave, they opt out.
Something that just occurred to me, something else that it would potentially cost either an individual or a group of leaders is reputation, I think. Like, I think some of the choices or decisions that we've made in leadership for the sake of unity, keeping the church unified or whatever, and that leads to people feeling a certain way about those decisions or making assumptions about how those decisions were made or about us as individuals or us as a church or whatever, it could cost reputation. If you even as an individual, like, I, for the sake of unity, I will lay down like the right to be right or whatever. Mm-hmm. I will do that. But that opens now you up for misperception or misunderstanding of who you are and what you believe and things like that. For the sake of unity, I think reputation should be added to the list of things that it might cost you.
Did you hear about Wright Baptist Church? They let the Salvation Army come and be part of their congregation. Did you hear about them?
Yeah. And you mentioned, I don't know if you mentioned it at 11, the TikTok, TikTok theology.
Yeah.
I think what that is emblematic of is a general cultural, like, we live in such a chaotic world that there is this hunger for clarity and black and white.
Yeah.
And so because you can find anything black and white that'll tell you exactly how it is, even if what they say is completely different than what someone else will say, like, you can now have your worldview like certain, like yeah. you can know that you're right, black and white, and far too often, like that leads to that those same divisions. There are people yeah. leaving because this church doesn't believe this precise thing about this specific yeah. doctrine, so I'm out. I will break fellowship with this community. Yeah. That's the spirit of our age, yeah. at yeah. least in the U.S. I don't. I'm assuming it's there
it's
too.
Very much there.
And I that's why I am so grateful to be a part of Grace, and I feel like Ride has the same heart, where we are willing to be a big tent, which we one of our core values is we make room, and it's all of this. That's yeah. it. This is part of what we believe will allow us to be the church that God has called us to be, and it means living a lot more in the gray than yeah. in the black and white, which yeah. can be very uncomfortable. I actually had I won't say who, but I was having a conversation with somebody who's very, very strident in their political and religious views, and I made a comment about how, you know, we gotta work sometimes in the gray, and he was like, ah, the devil lives in the gray. And I was like, dude, the devil lives in the black and white too. Yeah. I'm like, look at how divided we are. You yeah. know, I'm like, we've gotta learn how to coexist and be in community with people that we don't agree with. So
yeah. Yeah.
But how to talk about the things that we do.
Yeah, yeah.
We do. I want to take that away from this conversation. The emphasis that you and another church congregation, essentially another faith organization, came together and talked about what you have in common,
mm-hmm. yeah.
the things that you do. Where do we disagree? Where do we agree? Yeah. And you didn't just focus on what you disagreed on.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I think even the people that I'm thinking of that have left or have told us that they're leaving, we agree on more things
yeah. Mm.
than we
yeah.
disagree on.
Yeah. Mm. And I say sometimes it's one of the things about unity and maturity is that you've got to have a really wide open door to receive people, but you've got to leave the back door ajar because people will leave.
Yeah.
And one of the challenges, we try and hold people. Sometimes unity calls like, oh, it's okay. Them walking away is fine. Mm-hmm. Them leaving is okay mm-hmm. for the unity of this. This mm-hmm. body, so it's but that's a mature thing. It's a mm-hmm. maturity stance where you have to like say that's a thing we know that mm-hmm. happens.
Yeah,
for pastors.
This will be the last question, but one of the questions I had as somebody who's waded in the waters of dissent in mm-hmm. my life, what do you guys think the difference between? Because you said disunity can oftentimes show up in the mask of, well, I'm just asking questions, or mm-hmm. I'm just giving you feedback, or mm-hmm. whatever. So. But that really is a spirit mm. of disunity sometimes. Mm. And so what do we think the dividing line or the line is between someone who is loyally dissenting mm. and has frustrations and agitation about the church or what we're doing or something or someone, and somebody who is bringing a spirit of disunity with them? Is there a difference?
Again, I think my knee-jerk reaction would be, is it a spirit of condemnation mm. or a spirit of superiority? Versus a spirit of curiosity where you really are just wanting to understand more, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
When someone comes and says, you know, I just want to know, or I'm just mm. trying to get clarity or something like that. I've had people come to me with a posture of humility mm-hmm. and it feels way different than somebody who's coming to beat me over the head with some sort of,
yeah.
You know, self-superiority, or they feel mm. like they're coming to me with the answer. They're coming to me kind of already locked and loaded and not mm. necessarily truly trying to, what was your example? I'm just trying to mm. get more information or.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have over the years, both when I was doing my nonprofit and now, I've had people as a part of my organization that I would call are loyal dissenters, mm-hmm. as you said. And to me, it looks like what you just said, Marian, it's that posture of, hey, like, I'm with you, but here's the challenge I have. Mm-hmm. That is a totally different approach than you're wrong, and let yeah. me show you why you're wrong. You know, it's just even that look, I'm not going anywhere, but I really struggle with this. That's a posture thing. And then there's the behavior. You see yeah. afterwards that they're still with you,
yeah.
that they're
yeah.
still supporting you, that they're talking positively of you to others. Like there's behavior that can prove the heart behind yeah. mm-hmm. your willingness to stay in the room and be a loyal dissenter versus just a dissenter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I was going to say around the same thing where if you character is I think unity and character is tested most or best under stress
mm.
and under pressure. And so when things are really happy, everyone can just happen or whatever.
Sure.
But I think when relationship that allows someone to come and tell you, I actually don't agree with this, but I am with you, those are people I value.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like I value such people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Does it hurt me? Yes. Does it make me feel like, yeah, yes, but I value it because that is someone who, there's just something special about that. Because as ministers, I know we've had those cases where you can tell the Spirit of God it tells you that this is not of God.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell someone telling you, oh, I don't agree with this. And I was specific to use the word gifts of discernment and questions. Those are the things that underlying that you can sense a spirit that is leading towards fracturing relationships.
Yeah. Yes.
That's where I struggle.
Yeah. 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 I loved in your sermon. It's the first time I'd ever thought about like the spirit of unity has already been given to us. Mm-hmm. It's not our job to like
create it, out of
force it, create it, whatever. It is something that we simply should steward.
Yeah.
That was a new thought for me, and I appreciate that because it tells me that it's not my job to try to manifest unity where unity doesn't exist, but that it already has been given, and it's our job to simply take care of that with one another as long as we agree that that's what our job is.
Yeah. And for those who did not get the Jenga illustration, is that why it looked straight at the beginning and looked different at the end is that the more we try and fix it, the more it's still standing, but it's totally distorted. That's why I was pushing it. You feel like it's there, but it's distorted. It has a semblance of unity, but it's one clip away from falling apart.
You should have let it fall.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I know you said last question, but that's the one question I have.
I didn't let it fall?
Because, no, you said we distort God's picture in trying to fix unity ourselves. You talked about doing it in our own strength, and that's kind of when the Tower of Jenga got off kilter and started to look very unstable. When we try to fix it ourselves, we distort God's picture. My question then is, what should we do when we detect disunity?
Yeah. So when you go back to the text, what Paul writes is that unity is built around we having a Christ-shaped character, all right? So the thing is this, that if we work on being more like Christ, we naturally will bear fruit that is more Christ-like, which is unity. Now, unity being one of them. If you try, what I was trying to say is that if you try and fix things in your own strength, our definition of unity, most of the time it's shaded by brokenness and a world that is not in line with God's view. It have as an appearance of unity, but it's distorted from God's perfect picture. So if the idea is that we work ourselves to be more like Christ, gentleness, all these things, that fruit collectively is unity. Doesn't mean everyone is agreeing on everything. Yeah. That's what I was trying to say, but Christ-shaped.
Wow.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. And I don't know if this is an answer to what you just said, but it's like, the people that may be suffering from some, I don't know, addiction or something, and you look at the people around them, you're like, well, they're just enabling them.
Yeah.
And when you go to talk to those people, they're like, if I didn't enable them, then there would be no peace. So I'm just doing it. And it's like, well, it's not real unity. It's not real, peace. It's distorted. You feel like it'd be better than rocking the boat a little bit and trying to fix the actual issues, but it's not real.
Yeah.
It's distorted. Where do we go next, Barry?
Well, we got one more sermon in this series about the Holy Spirit, and this will be the most out there version of this series because we're talking about the Spirit.
Ooh.
We're talking about the Spirit of life, and I want to get into some of the more odd, mystical, mysterious ways that the Spirit moves that aren't necessarily the ones that we normally think about, like spiritual gifts and stuff. I wanted to get into some of that. So, yeah, we're talking, we'll get into it. I won't spoil anything.
I'm intrigued.
All right, Ken, thank you so much for being here. Safe travels back to Australia.
Thank you.
If you need to leave all your warm clothes here, We've got.
I will not need them.
Yeah,
because it's summer right now in Australia.
Yeah. We'll hold them for the next time you visit in December.
I will be coming in summer.
Yeah.
Okay. Blessings to you and your family as you travel home. Thank you so much for preaching, and thanks for making time for this today.
Thank you.
Maren, will you please send us out?
I will. Do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God.
And we'll see you on the other side of Sunday.